Ladies, gentlemen, warriors, lore nerds, and those just here for background noise while cooking pasta, welcome. You've stumbled upon the definitive, possibly chaotic, and hopefully entertaining deep dive into the timeline, secrets, and wild backstories of my pride and joy, Revelations. Now, this series is mostly for the cast and crew, so whether you're grinding lines, meal prepping, or attempting backflips on a pogo stick, you know who you are. This is your one-stop shop for everything you need to know about this epic saga. In full disclaimer, I've forgotten at least 43% of my own lore, so this is just as much for me as it is for you. Let's learn, or relearn, together. So, where do we start? Well, crafting a story isn't just about tossing cool characters into a dramatic fight scene and hoping for the best. Although that does sound fun, you need characters, a climax, emotional stakes, themes, and yes, even those cursed things we call fillers. I hate those. I'll be honest, like every storyteller, I've stumbled, tripped, and occasionally faceplanted through the creative process. But with all that trial and error, I truly believe Revelations might just be the best thing I've ever built. Buckle up, it's going to be a wild ride. Now, to the good stuff. Let's crank the cosmic clock all the way back to the beginning of time itself. We're talking OG creation level stuff. And like any self-respecting storyteller raised on sci-fi, mythology, and the Big Bang Theory reruns, I kick things off with a classic, the Big Bang. Not the physics lecture kind, more like if Sheldon Cooper met Stan Lee and said, let's build a multiverse, and then immediately nuke the void into existence. Boom. Chaos. Cosmic vibes. Roll opening credits. From this absurd explosion of everything, two ultra-powerful, spiritually overqualified beings were born, Eternal and Divinity. Celestials. Cosmic co-partners. Think of them as the power couple of the multiverse. Except, instead of date nights, they build galaxies for fun. Eternal, the male, is this cosmic level force that just exists beyond time and space. Like a philosophical gym bro with ultimate energy and no need for sleep. Divinity, the female, is just a powerful, ethereal, elegant, and slightly terrifying in a don't mess with me, I literally birth stars kind of way. Together, they're unstoppable. Now, will Eternal and Divinity show up in the actual show? Honestly, probably not. Maybe a cameo in a vision or a name drop during some old prophecy monologue. They're like the directors you never see, pulling strings from the shadows while sipping celestial wine in the outer rim of existence. But they did do something huge. They birthed two divine, dramatic, ultra-woke gods who are going to be very, very relevant. Enter our cosmic twins, Rao and Amatsu, aka Sun and Moon, Light and Darkness. Rao, crafted from the radiant essence of Eternal and Divinity, showed up glowing like the universe's golden retriever. He's the god of light, warmth, positivity, and let's go on a morning jog through a meadow energy. He was born looking like the brighter, sunnier version of his brother. And his job? Spread life, light, and inspiration across the stars. Amatsu, on the other hand, rolled up with a mysterious anti-hero energy before it was cool. Also made from Eternal and Divinity, but dipped in moonlight and brooding vibes. He's the god of darkness, shadows, mysteries, and the poetic silence of the night. Basically the kind of god who'd write tragic haikus alone on a mountain. Together, they were tasked with one job, create life throughout the universe. And out of all the planets they touched, one became their ultimate masterpiece, their favorite little project, Midgard. And that's where our story begins. So Midgard, Earth, the cosmic baby, the favorite child, the little blue marble that stole the hearts of the two god-tier brothers. Out of all the planets they helped spark with life, Midgard was different. Why? Because somehow, against all odds, they created something that actually resembled themselves. Humans. Emotional, dramatic, anxious little meat puppies who cry during sad movies, spiral over late-night thoughts, and write poetry about heartbreak at 2 a.m. You know, us. Basically, Rao and Amatsu made Sims. What feelings? And unfortunately, they didn't include an off switch. These humans weren't just living things. They had personality, empathy, creativity, depression, and anxiety. All the mental baggage and brilliance of real-life consciousness. And Rao and Amatsu? They were hooked. It was like looking into a cosmic mirror. They thought, yep, these are our people. So naturally, they decided, this is the planet we protect. This is where we'll enforce our divine TLC. Midgard became their favorite sandbox. But of course, in come the parents, Eternal and Divinity, aka the celestial mom and dad, with rules stricter than a private academy. You may create life, you may nourish the life, but under no circumstances are you to interact directly with any of the life forms. Let them believe whatever they wish, but do not meddle. And what do two curious god-powered sons do when given strict boundaries? Yeah, they ignore them. Well, kind of. Amatsu, ever the shy, sensitive, rule-following introvert, actually listened to their parents. He stayed back, watched from afar, kept to the shadows, on brand for the god of darkness. He wanted to connect with humanity, but was too respectful, or maybe too scared, to break the rules? Rao, on the other hand, Rao's got main character syndrome. He's the god of the frickin' sun, okay? He shines. He couldn't just sit back while the little human struggled. He was like, weather, I got you. Crops, let me bless those fields. Sunlight, say less. He didn't show up like, hey, what's up guys, it's me, Rao. But he definitely made sure the people felt his presence. He'd flex a little, clear the skies, boost the harvest, maybe vibe up a sunrise just right. And humans started to notice. They got the sense that something or someone was looking out for them. And so begins the first wave of divine fandom. Rao became a legend. The prayers started, the altars, the art, the myths. He didn't ask for worship, but hey, he didn't not enjoy it either. Meanwhile, Amatsu, still in the shadows, watching, waiting, brooding. He felt forgotten, like the younger sibling at a birthday party where only one name's on the cake. The jealousy started to brew. Not loud or angry, but quiet and internal. He didn't act on it. Not yet. He just wanted to keep Rao in check. Make sure he didn't go too far or get them both caught. Because the gods may be divine, but they're still brothers. And brothers fight, lie, and sometimes accidentally start divine wars. Anyway, things didn't seem to get too bad at first. The world was turning, crops were growing, Rao was vibing, and Amatsu was quietly seething. You know, totally normal sibling god behavior. But they're not staying in Rao's spotlight forever. Let's hit fast forward, because now we're diving into Amatsu's side of the story. And this is where the darkness starts creeping in. Now, remember how Amatsu was kind of the sad boy of the cosmos? God of the moon, masters of shadows, emotional wallflower type who kept his distance because rules? Yeah, well, that didn't last. See, unlike Rao, who was getting praised left right like a rock star at a divine Coachella, Amatsu got nothing. No temples, no prayers, no one vibing with the night. If people were awake past sundown, it was usually just to ask Rao for a better tomorrow. Night was treated like an intermission, a pause, a backdrop. But then, one night, something happened that shattered his eternal emo playlist. Someone prayed to him. Not just anyone. A young woman, living in a quiet coastal village, who would sit beside an old tree by the sea and just look up at the moon. She didn't beg for miracles, she didn't cry for wealth or revenge or crop insurance. She just thanked the night, admired its calm, whispered gratitude for the stars, for the moonlight, for the beauty of silence. No big ask, no big drama, just peace. Her name was Lumia. And for the first time in all existence, Amatsu felt seen. So, naturally, he did what any emotionally neglected celestial being would do. He started watching over her, obsessively. But like, sweet obsessively. not in a full creepy way. Okay, maybe a little creepy, but in a divine, tragic romance kind of way. Day or night, he kept an eye on her. He bent little rules here and there, smoothed her path, calmed her storms, protected her from afar. And before long, something began to grow in him. Something warm, unfamiliar, and completely, catastrophically against the rules. Love. And love makes gods do very dumb things. So, he disguised himself, transformed into a mortal, descended to Midgard, moved into a quiet part of the village, lived among the people. By the day, he wandered, listened, learned. By night, when the moon would normally glow, he vanished from the sky, because he was down there, in the flesh. And while Lumia continued to pray to a moon that wasn't there, she never stopped. That only made it worse, or sweeter, or both. Matsu, lurking close by, became more drawn to her than ever. Eventually, he worked up the courage to talk to her. No, hey, I'm actually the god of the moon, surprise! No divine flexing, just a humble guy from the village with a quiet voice and sad eyes. And over time, a connection bloomed. Cue to the tragic love story setup. Because, as anyone who's even read one Greek myth knows, when gods fall in love with mortals, it never ends with flowers and happily ever after. And yes, you guessed it, the bitch got pregnant. That's right, Lumia's pregnant. Boom. Demigod baby incoming. Celestial consequences loading. So now we've got a literal half-god fetus growing in Lumia. A god who's broken every parental rule in the divine handbook, and Rao, who still has no idea his little brother's out here pulling a full Zeus move. And you know what? Props to Amatsu, honestly. Guy went from zero prayers to, hey, I'm a dad now. As for Rao, still single, still glowing, still clueless. Sorry, bro. You're getting outspaced in more ways than one. Anyways, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Because what happens next? Oh, it's so much worse. Want me to pick up from the fallout? Parents finding out? Rao reacting? And the beginning of everything unraveling? So now we've got a problem. A big one. Amatsu has broken the one rule set by his all-powerful, all-knowing, definitely watching from the cosmic living room, parents. Do not meddle with mortals. And what does he do? Not only does he meddle, he straight up falls in love, impregnates a human, and tries to play it cool like no one's gonna notice. Genius. Naturally, he decides the best course of action is to keep it a secret. Lie low, be subtle. But, unfortunately, Rao, our golden boy, sun god, and nosy older brother, has eyes everywhere. He's basically the divine equivalent of that neighbor who's watching through the blinds 24/7. Rao starts to notice that one particular village doesn't even worship him, like everyone else. No statues, no songs, no sun-themed dance circles. Suspicious. Being the vain, attention-hungry celestial he is, he investigates. And of course, he finds Lumia, quietly praying to the moon every night. Busted! Rao instantly figures out that his bro's been sneaking down to Earth like a lovesick teenager. But instead of confronting Amatsu directly like a normal person, he pulls a full-on divine tantrum. And not just any tantrum, a plague. Yep, Rao and all his jealousy, petty glory, goes biblical and rains down a curse on humanity. Think Moses meets COVID BC-19. Crops dying, people coughing, villages in chaos. It's bad. And who catches it? Lumia. The one mortal Amatsu actually cares about is dying. In a panic, Amatsu rushes down to Midgard. He finds Lumia, sick, pale, fading, clutching their unborn child. He's furious, heartbroken, and he knows exactly who did this. So he storms back into the heavens and confronts Rao. Did you do this? Did you curse the earth? What? Me? No, I don't do plagues. I'm the god of light, remember? But Amatsu isn't buying. The two argue, loud, fiery, cosmic bickering. You broke the rules first. You let them worship you, build statues in your name. You wanted to be seen. I didn't sleep with them. Tensions rise, the stars dim, the skies crack, This isn't just a sibling spat anymore. It's the beginning of a divine cold war. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Lumia gives birth, a baby girl. Her name isn't revealed yet, but hey, let's just say it means star and a long-lost celestial tongue. A demigod born of moonlight and mortality, Lumia, even on her deathbed, knew who Uematu was. She always had. That same feeling she had when praying to the moon was the same warmth she felt whenever she was with him. She just knew. Before she dies, Uematu seals the child's powers, placing his glowing hand over her tiny chest and casting a sigil, a divine lock to suppress her godly essence. It would keep her safe, hidden. Earth wasn't ready for a godlike child. And then Lumia dies, right there in Uematu's arms. And something inside of him shatters. The quiet, brooding god of the moon snaps. All the centuries of being overlooked, silenced, shadowed by his golden brother, ignored by mortals, and now, robbed of the only thing he's ever truly loved? That rage? That heartbreak? Doesn't just burn. It rises. The god of the night is done being silent. And what comes next will darken the world. Fueled by heartbreak and betrayal, Uematu ascended to Elysium, sword drawn, eyes burning with grief and rage. The moon god, once quiet and distant, now bled fury with every breath. He had lost the only being who had ever seen him, not as a god, but as a man. And he blamed Rao. Their final confrontation shattered the heavens. In that divine realm of clouds and light, time stood still. What raged for centuries across Earth with blackened skies, poisoned crops, thunder-splitting mountains, oceans-devouring coasts, lasted only hours in Elysium. But the damage was done. Nature itself cried out, unbalanced by the war between the sun and moon. Brother against brother, light against dark, creation against vengeance. Uematu fought not just with blades, but with sorrow. With every swing, he unleashed the grief of Lumia's death, the pain of his daughter's uncertain faith, and the guilt of defying the divine law. But as the war dragged on, something inside of him twisted. His sorrow turned to hatred. His mourning festered into madness. The purity of night became corruption. Darkness took hold. And Rao, flawed, prideful, but still tethered to the light, realized the truth. This wasn't a battle he could win without losing everything. So we did the unthinkable. Using the last of his divine authority, Rao banished Uematu. Not to Midgard, not to Elysium, but to a place of his own making. A realm born from Amatsu's rage and pain. Forged in ashes of his fall. Acheron. The realm of shadows, torment, and silence. There, Uematu would be trapped for eternity. Severed from the stars. The earth, and the daughter he never got to raise. No moonlight. No prayers, no hope, just the echo of his own wrath. The war ended, Earth healed, barely, and Rao, now alone, became the reluctant steward of both sun and moon, bearing the burden of balance across the skies. But while the war was over, the consequences were far from it. For during the final hours of their battle, his divine magic tore through the skies and swords clashed like thunder, a celestial chemical was born. A glowing, unseen mist that drifted downward from Elysium like fallout. It was called mana. This ancient, otherworldly energy fell across Midgard, into forests, rivers, oceans, animals, people. It changed things, warped them. Some life evolved, gaining powers never seen before. Some were corrupted, twisted into monsters, werewolves, lamias, minotaurs, and worse. And others were simply awakened. Elves, dragons, spirits. Their latent magic drawn out by the mana now flowing through the world's veins. The age of myth had begun. A world that once knew only men and gods now stood divided. Reshaped by war, magic, and celestial consequence. Magic was no longer divine. It was everywhere. And somewhere, deep in the black abyss of Acheron, Uematu waited. He may have been banished, but he was not finished.